What's up, Fight Fan? You're listening to MMA Daily, the podcast where we bring you the latest in the world of mixed martial arts. It is Monday, December 11th, 2023, and this week's episode, UFC 296, A Critical Crossroad. We'll be talking about everything UFC 296, obviously, but we will kick it off with UFC Vegas 83 and the bantamweight fight between Song Yadong and Chris Gutierrez. I am your host, Gabriel Gonzalez. As we said last week, Natalie is on vacation, but I brought in a special guest, Brianna Eckert of Bree Talks MMA. Bree, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Thank you for coming back to the show. It was so much fun the last time you were on.
Yes, it was. And now we got video, so it's going to be even more fun.
Yes, so for fans who are watching it on YouTube, a special video episode of MMA Daily and kind of the UFC 296 preview show. So I figured we could have a little bit of fun with this one. First off, it's been about a couple months since your last appearance. What have you been up to?
Just grinding. I think actually since then, I did my first post-fight interview with the Shamrock Show. I think that was after I did your show. And I did another one. So I've done two so far. I've done two events. And of course, I've still been doing my podcast, doing the interviews. I've been doing at least a couple episodes a week. So yeah, just staying on the grind.
I was going to say, I saw that. To me, that's some of the most exciting stuff. I would argue it's a million times better than, you know, the pre-fight stuff. As much as we like to get into, oh, let's tell the narrative and all that, I think that getting that, you know, firsthand reaction, you know, their adrenaline is still pumping. I mean, a lot of these men and women don't, they still haven't put the shirt back on yet from their fight. It's it's a very raw, you know, part of, you know, just the whole experience and getting to interact with the fighters. Personally, that to me is my favorite part of the job. But what about you? How did you enjoy it? Because I did see just this morning, you know, you weren't even planning on it. And next thing you know, our buddy Dave just kind of throws you right into the fire.
Yeah, it's funny. And I had a longer version of that story on that full episode of that podcast, but I kind of just like clipped it down to give people an idea. But I just showed up there with my camera and my ring light and my microphone. And I was like, can I do post-fight interviews? And I didn't even know I was going to cover the event until the day before because I never like heard anything from them. And then all of a sudden, the owner of Shamrock messaged me the day before the event. It was like, hey, did you get our email? And I was like, no, I didn't get anything. So I guess they like sent it to the wrong email or something. I don't know. But yeah, so I got to cover it. And then, you know, Dave kind of pushed me to do the post-fight interviews. So when I got there, I found the owner and I was like, hey, can I do post-fight interviews? And he was like, yeah, here, you can interview the winners. And then I just kind of set up my camera. But it was really cool, especially because like you never know where some of these fighters are going to end up in the local scene. Like I got to interview Dustin Lampros, who was on The Ultimate Fighter, and he got a big win. And then, you know, who knows where he's going to go next? And Josh Augustine, that was my last main event. He ended up getting a big win, and there's some big things in store for him now, too. So pretty exciting. And just getting that raw emotion immediately after the fight is so cool. And being able to share that moment with them, I think, is really unique and special. I think it's really awesome.
Oh yeah, it really is. And you're definitely not wrong about, you know, where people end up. That is a big part of, you know, when I was starting out is doing a lot of these local shows that came through Southern California. And it's a funny thing because they don't feel like the biggest deal in the moment sometimes. Not everyone has a big name. Not, you know, 99% of these people don't get a Wikipedia page, you know what I mean? Sure. You know, which is what it is. I don't have one either, to be, you know, to be fair.
But, yeah, me neither.
Yeah, but then, you know, the number of people who've gone on to have, you know, fights in UFC, in Bellator, and it's like, mind you, none of this happened until like 5-6 years later. I don't even cover a lot of those local shows anymore, more or less because it's really you know, plateaued in Southern California, more people kind of started holding shows elsewhere. But the fact is, it's like, you know, we're doing that and, you know, you're like their girlfriend is like right there recording you guys and all that. And it's like a big deal. You meet their mom who's just so excited supporting her son. And it's
The
like,
moms always get the most excited about the
oh
interviews. I
my
love
gosh, yeah. And then, you know, 5, 6 years later from that, and it's like, hey, short notice, UFC fighting somebody. And it's like, what? It's like, dude. And
Yeah.
you know, you don't realize that part of the journey in the moment. And then, you know, now being where I'm at and seeing a lot of that, you know, you realize all of it really paid off, all of it, you know, and I wouldn't trade it for anything. So definitely, I encourage you do more. It's a crazy thing how it all comes together later on, and you don't know it at the time. Honestly, you really don't. So I encourage it. I saw you brought your energy. I saw some of the clips of that. So keep killing it. What did you think of this main event on Saturday? Obviously, Song going in, supposed to the card was supposed to be in China. I thought that he delivered really well. I think that it ended up working out in terms of the UFC. I think it came together really fast. And to be honest, I am okay with saving Song for another big card, maybe like co-main event to Zhang Weili. So I was okay that it ended up at Apex because I think he deserves to be part of an event in China that's as big as they deserve. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree. I thought it was a great main event. And one thing that I do like about the Apex events is that, you know, you can really focus on the performance because there's none of the, you know, the light. It's not as intense without the, you know, the crowd screaming and cheering, and you can really hear everything. It's more of like a pressure cooker type fight. So I thought that was really interesting. And I thought that Song, I was a little bit surprised at just how good his grappling is, and he's so well rounded. And I knew that before, but I guess I kind of slept on his grappling a little bit. I was like, wow, he's got some crazy ability to control his opponents. I mean, he controlled Gutierrez almost the entire fight, it seemed like, and his boxing looked good. So I think, yeah, I think there's probably some adjustments he could make, just, you know, for depending on who he fights next. But overall, I was really, really impressed because Gutierrez is really good. I think he's really underrated. And I think that going into that fight, I had a feeling Song would win, but you know, Gutierrez is really tough. So I was like, I don't know. You never know with these fights. And I was really, really impressed with Song Yadong. I'm more impressed with him with every fight because the last time I was more impressed with his striking, this time more impressed with his grappling. So yeah, I'm excited to see what he kind of puts together next in his next performance.
Oh yeah, I think when you look at what Chris has been able to do, not for nothing, the irony of Chris and Khalil Roundtree, probably two of the more notorious, you know, destroyers of knees and legs in the UFC back to back. Yeah, Chris, one, I was impressed with Chris. I thought he was executing a really decent game plan on the feet, and he pushed Song to have to use a very multifaceted attack and execute it well. He didn't give Song anything. Song had to work to get into a lot of those positions, corral Chris to the octagon to really unload a bit. You talked about the grappling. I thought that Chris was ready and Song still did well. And I think that speaks once again to how good Song did in that fight. Also, Loki, his cardio. Song, we don't talk about this a lot. He is a very built bantamweight. I mean, he has got some extra muscle that a lot of those other guys, even like I think an Aljamain, doesn't really have on his frame. So I was impressed by his ability to just conserve his energy. I thought that his cardio looked great for 5 rounds. I thought that he did a good job not expending too much. Look, even at bantamweight, a guy like him can't just go balls to the wall for 25 minutes and he's going to be fresh. He's too muscular. So I was impressed with how he did that. I thought he made sure he was still going to be an explosive threat in round five like he was in round one. So I was impressed by that. Just a brilliantly executed game plan and preparation by Song. On the grappling, obviously that speaks to his work over there at Alpha Male with all those grapplers like Faber and everyone else over the years. So that has clearly paid off. I think what we're seeing is this kid who, you know, you talk about even like 2020, just really that young guy coming up, you know, has the fight with Chito and things like that. Now really come into his own, not just top prospect, but like bona fide night in, night out contender. And I think that that's where it speaks to it now. Now we talk about, okay, you know, we've seen you against, you know, number 15 through about number 7. Now let's really talk about what can we do to get you into that top four, top three fights that could actually propel you to a title shot. Now, not for nothing, that's probably really tricky right now because we're kind of waiting to see how everything plays out. Obviously, Sean O'Malley
Yeah, well, and with
rematch.
Figgy moving up, and there's a lot of
Yes.
activity at bantamweight right now,
Yeah,
especially in the top five.
I personally don't hate a fight with Figueiredo. I think that would be a great test for Song. Looking at it, okay, Chito's got the next shot. Marab is on deck. I know he did
Marab's
that
about to
whole.
fight Cejudo, right?
Yes, they just announced that too. You know,
That's
I
gonna be
find that a
such a good
little.
fight.
That's good, right? I mean, that's even surprising to me too, because I felt like Marab was
Yeah.
like, bro, it's right there. There's no one else is getting it after Chito. Like, but I also
I
understand, you know,
know.
he hasn't fought since around April or May. So, like, I get it. If
Yeah.
Sean O'Malley doesn't fight till September, you don't want 14 months on on
No.
ice. But yeah, you know what? That's a great fight. I like the Figueiredo fight, to be honest. And I know they had their little thing in the octagon, which I think, I'm not gonna lie, Song almost he almost took a shot at himself, and I'm like, wait, I think he might have fumbled that in the, you know, the language barrier a little bit. I don't think that Peter Yan is a good fight for Song, for the simple fact, name wise
No.
and all that, yes, but honestly, I think that Peter needs someone else right now.
Yeah,
Just
I agree.
he's on a tough end. I don't think that Song beating him would carry the clout that he needs right now. I think he'd be better suited. Is Aljamain staying at 35? Wouldn't hate that. We talked about Figueiredo.
Yeah, I like the Figueiredo Yan fight. I like even Song against somebody like, has he fought Sanhagen yet? I don't think he
Yes, he did.
has.
He did. Remember, that was with the elbows that cut him open? Yeah,
Oh,
I think that was last
I'm
year.
thinking of,
And
I
to
don't know what
your
I'm thinking of.
credit, Song looked really good in that fight too, until, you know, look, the Sanhagen's elbows bailed him out of that fight, which credit to Corey, but it's like, yeah, he's proven himself there that he could fight those guys. Even then, I mean, I'll say right now, if you ran it back with
How long
Sanhagen,
ago was that? Because I
that had
can't
to have been
remember.
last fall or summer.
I don't know how I forgot about that
Let
fight.
me look at
I
that.
literally cannot remember it.
I think because Corey went straight into like prepping for Chito Vera. Like, I feel like he turned it around relatively, you know, they kept Corey moving. Let me look at the bantamweight rankings right
I might
now.
have missed that fight. I might not have seen it because I cannot recall.
Bri Bri Talks MMA missed a fight.
I know.
What?
That was probably before I
The
started my show.
woman who talks for 2 hours of from prelims
I
to main event, you
know.
missed a. No,
I
Dominic
know.
Cruz is out there. I mean,
Oh, I
you
kind of
know.
forgot about Cruz.
Yeah, I mean, he's not done yet. I think that that
When's the
would be a
last
good
time he
test.
fought? It's been a while.
I thought he didn't. He's fought since the Chito fight, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to look at that. But
I
anyway,
can't
the
even
fact is, there's
remember.
options for Song. I think it's also just
Yeah,
about timing a little bit, you
I
know.
agree.
Yeah. Oh, his last fight was Chito, actually. Last.
Oh,
Like last July. I don't know. I think
that was a
that,
good fight.
yes, it was. I was there. It was really fun. I think that Cruz is just in that kind of like Dustin Poirier part of his career where
Yeah.
he's like, look, you know, no more up and comers. Like, give me another vet and let's just maximize my time. But I'm not interested in
Yeah.
fighting a guy on the up and up on the prelims anymore. It's just
No.
I've done too much, which is fair. You know, that's on him. That leads to less activity, but at his age, maybe he's okay with it, and you know, the money he's made, etc. So who knows? He's certainly got a job. It's not like he's unemployed if he's not fighting, right?
Right. Yeah, he
So
did it the smart way for sure.
yeah. I know you saw it. What'd you think of Khalil Roundtree, Anthony Smith?
Oh my gosh, Khalil Roundtree. I've been high on Khalil Roundtree pretty much since the first time I ever saw him fight. I've just thought, like, one day I'm like, he's gonna have a big moment in his career. And I think that is like one of the first big moments for me where it's like, okay, he at some point could be fighting for a title, I think. Honestly, I mean, he's still got a ways to go because, you know, I mean, 205 is, I think it's not the most Activision, but it is still like there's in the top 15. It's not easy. Like there's some really good grapplers in that division, like Rockich, and you know it's not going to be simple. But I do think that he has incredible power, and I think that you know there were times where I thought he was maybe swinging a little bit wild at times. And he did get hit with some shots from Anthony Smith, but overall, yeah, I mean, his power is just unreal. It's rare. He's just, yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I think that I there was never a moment in that fight where I thought that Anthony Smith really was going to do anything to him. So I think that's my thought on that, where, you know, I was watching the fight. I'm like, yeah, Roundtree's going to either finish this fight or he's going to win by decision. I'm like, there's not much hope for Anthony Smith in this fight. Now, before I watched the fight, I was like, oh, this might be a tough fight with for Roundtree just because of the grappling. And like, maybe, you know, Smith could get some kind of a crafty submission or something. But yeah, he's just got too much power. Yeah, good cardio too. So I was impressed.
Yeah, I think Khalil is one of those guys, and you on the feet against anybody, oh my gosh, like that's a pick 'em fight. I mean, striking with Khalil Roundtree is just like, you know, maybe you'll get him, but let's be real, you better be on your P's and Q's, as they say. I personally and I hate to say it, but it's like, and I know I believe Anthony was coming off a win, I just, on short notice, and also the fact that Anthony's been a little up and down with the fights in recent years. And look, he's another tough veteran. He's had so many fights. But yeah, to me, the fact that he took it on short notice, I know it's kind of promoted as, oh man, that's gangster and all that right there. I personally don't like it when they do, because in my mind, I'm like, well, yeah, this just feels like a lateral move for everybody. And now, mind you, obviously, look, you take a risk, you beat a guy like a Roundtree on short notice, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah, you're
a right?
hero then. Yeah.
Yeah. But the other way, then it's like, did Khalil beat the best guy? You know, were you as prepared? Sometimes I'm not a fan of that. And I found myself feeling that because we've gotten to know Anthony so well, and he's done some commentary work, or sorry, analyst work. You know about his family and the time he fought off the home invader, and it's like, you don't want to see a guy taking a loss like that, you know, but,
no,
you know,
especially after like he took so much damage in the Glover fight.
Yes.
And it just seems like it's been hard for him to kind of catch a break. I would like to see him kind of maybe take some time off and maybe wait for a fight that is a more winnable fight and not on short notice. Because if that fight wasn't on short notice, then I would have had a harder time predicting that fight. Like, it would have been harder for me to say, oh, I don't know, maybe Roundtree's, you know, in over his head on this one. Like, maybe, you know, Anthony Smith can pull this off. And there was like that back of my mind thought of like, of course, Anthony Smith is always dangerous, but it does seem like when he takes short notice fights sometimes, or even just fights that are maybe not the best fights for him to take, it is hard because it's like, well, yeah, we like the guy. You know, I love listening to his him talking about fights. I think he's really an intelligent mind in MMA, and his knowledge of the sport and just his skill too is great. So I hope that, yeah, maybe he takes some time off, maybe he takes a fight that's more well matched for him. Because I just don't want to see him take too much damage. He did take quite a bit of damage in that fight, and he took a lot of damage in the Glover fight too. So yeah, I don't know. And then it's also hard to gauge, like you said, like obviously I'm a big Khalil Roundtree fan, but it is hard to tell like how good really are they when they beat someone who doesn't have a full camp, you know, when the odds are basically stacked against them. It is hard to tell, like, okay, how do we even grade this win, because their opponent didn't have all the tools necessary to set themselves up for success. So,
no, I'm with you there. I think it's just, where do you go with Anthony Smith? He's kind of fought everybody. You know, it's really tough. Yeah. And you know what? He's earned the right to be a bit like, you know, the vets too, Gaethje and Poirier, like, give me the big fight only. And, you know, it's like, I get it. There's less of those fights when you start playing that game, but how can you say he doesn't deserve it? He's obviously done so much for the sport too. So I don't
Yes.
know where we'll go from there. I saw this. If the Jiří fight falls apart, Khalil Roundtree against Rokic. Don't hate that one.
I think
Matt, too.
Rokic could win that fight.
Yeah, the grappling there. Also, he's a
Yeah.
very powerfully, I mean, he might be one of the few guys bigger legs at 205 than
Yeah,
Roundtree.
he's
Yeah.
like a tree.
Yeah, he's a unit for sure. And still moves really well for being a big guy.
Yeah.
It depends on that. I obviously saw like Rokic accepted the February date with Jiří, but then they haven't heard back, and it's like, one, I don't know that it happens actually that fast, so I'm not gonna say it's dead in the water yet. But yeah, I think that Rokic makes sense if they gotta rebook Rokic for somebody. Maybe you wait to see a little bit what's going on. I mean, is there a chance that a guy like, let's say, for example, something falls out and they need Pereira faster than Jamal Hill's ready? Then maybe Pereira goes to someone else and you welcome back Jamal Hill at a later date, something like that. I'm not sure, but yeah, I think that he's earned a big fight in this iteration of 205. I don't think that there's a lot of, it's not bottlenecked like some of the other divisions. I think that there is a
Right.
lot of room to really jump in and get a big fight against one of these odd men out. So I could see something big happening for Roundtree in the near future, for sure. He set up a good
I would love to
2024.
see him against Jamal Hill. I think that would be a fantastic fight. I
Oh,
don't
yeah.
know. What kind of injury did Hill
It was the
get?
ankle, right? He
The
really
ankle.
tore up the ankle. Yeah, playing
Yeah, I'll be
basketball.
curious to see how that goes. Playing back, of course, not doing anything fighting
Okay, we could have that
related.
quick talk because I know you're very opinionated, so I like your thoughts on these things. Like when you play NFL or NBA, the contract literally says you cannot do things like snowboard and skydive because we're paying you millions of dollars to be able to physically play a sport. Get hurt
Right.
playing for us, not freaking, How do you feel about the MMA fighters? Because they don't make as much money to, I think,
Yeah.
be tied to such a restriction. That being said, I feel like there is a little bit of wiggle room to say, Jamal, you shouldn't have been doing that. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I don't know. I think fighting is such an individual sport that it's like a little bit different because it's like it's all on you. So if you lose, that's on you. Half your paycheck's gone. So it's kind of more of like they just need to take ownership. And if they make a decision, it's like, well, maybe I shouldn't have been doing that. Because we see fighters do things outside of fighting all the time. Like, Cowboy,
Oh
look at all the
yeah.
stuff he does. So
You could
it's like
you tell an NFL player like, you tell Patrick Mahomes like, "Hey, you could go shark dive and all that." He's like, "What? No. Like, not in a million years would they ever let me do a quarter of that stuff." Yeah, I think I'll say this. I think the UFC wouldn't be crazy or it wouldn't be out of line if they said, "Hey, if you break into the top five in your division, suddenly you are now contractually obligated to agree not to do that stuff." Because now you
Yeah.
are part of the big fights that sell pay-per-views. When you're on the up and up, we're not going to do that to you. And if you have a problem with that, okay. But if you want the big money that comes to the business, you also agree to this other stuff too. You get what I mean?
Yeah,
So
maybe if you are a champion or like you're
that's not
fighting for a
unfair. Yeah.
title, maybe then I could see that because it's like, well, you're holding the belt, so you're kind of responsible to, not get hurt, and unless it's, from your training or something like that. So, yeah, but it's funny, like those things happen so rarely that
Oh
when
yeah.
it happens, you're like, oh, wow,
I do also
what are
agree
you
with you.
doing?
Like, I mean, you lose your own money when you get yourself hurt. You know this. It's
Yeah.
not like the team, basketball.
Yeah, he
There's
lost his
14 other
belt.
guys on the squad, but
Yeah.
yeah, I get what you're saying. It's like you technically punish yourself because now, the team's moving. The UFC doesn't lose it, you do. So I get it too a little bit. So
Yeah.
I don't know, it's a
But
tough
a
one.
heck of an opportunity for Pajeda came out of it, so.
Yep. Look at that. What a performance too
Yeah.
that was.
Oh
Yeah,
my
so
gosh.
I'm sure we'll figure all this out. You know what? I know you could talk. You know, I like to talk, so let's have one of those big conversations. UFC 296. I like to
Yes.
work my way up. So, you know, I know there's a there's some great fights on the prelims, but for the sake of you know, brevity and our fan base and listeners, I'm gonna start from the main card up. So, oh my gosh, it's so stacked, I forget which one. That's Ian
I
Gary
know.
kicks it off, right? It's like I know which ones are on there. I just forget the order for a second. I thought, wait, is Tony opening the card? Vicente Luque, Ian Gary. You know what? I'm gonna talk about the extracurriculars of Ian Gary second. I want to start first. Vicente Luque is this guy post Wonderboy Thompson, just was putting it together really well. Looked like he was just poised for that breakthrough. Bilal Muhammad had a great performance, and we know where Bilal is right now on deck as the backup for the card. So I don't that's one of those losses that's aged well for Luque. He got
Yes.
back, he looked great in his last fight too. This is not a gimme fight. They are not building up Conor 2.0. This is a very pick'em fight. When you look at the veteran savvy of Luque, the experience on him, the fact that he's trained with Ian should be taken into account. This
Yeah.
is not a build 'em up fight. This is really two contenders in a very high stakes bout. Then for Ian, you talk about the momentum he's built. If there's one thing that's, I think, tough, the Neil Magny fight was more short notice for Neil stepping in to replace Jeff Neal. That now you have this, like, okay, you know, tough veteran, proven in main events. Can you do what you've done to other people against a guy like Luque? That's really the big thing. We know, look, Ian's ability to use his range, he's got a very tall, long frame for welterweight. He's a very dangerous guy, knows how to work distance very well against the opponents he has. Can you execute all those things against a guy like Luque? And I think that's really the big be all end all when the cage door closes. What about you?
Yeah, it's a very interesting fight. It's hard to predict because Ian Gary, it's kind of opposite ends of the spectrum. Ian Gary's coming up and Vicente Luque is kind of like at the peak of his career, I guess you could say, whereas like it's either up or down from here. He's
Oh,
either
yeah.
going to be fighting for a title for the probably the last time, or he's going to, you know, potentially this might be the tail end of his career. So it's like we just don't know. My biggest concern with Luque is the fact that he did have that brain injury. That to me, I'm honestly surprised that he's still fighting after that. So, and that kind of more comes from like, I guess, I don't know. I feel like a mom saying this, but it's like I care about his health and safety, and I hope that he's doing the right thing continuing to compete. I hope that it's not gonna like cause him problems later in life or, you know, be something to worry about. So that is one thing that does concern me a little bit, is that I am a little bit surprised that he even came back, but he did have a great performance against RDA, who is, you know, a former champion. So I it's hard to say. Ian Gary, I think he looked really good in the fight against Neil Magny. I mean, he absolutely dominated the fight. But like you said, short notice fight. And also, I was surprised that Ian Gary didn't finish that fight because Neil Magny was on one leg pretty much two out of three rounds. And so I was like, how is he not finishing this fight? So I'm like, okay, maybe he isn't as dangerous as I thought he was, because I thought he was going to be able to, like, if he won, I thought he was going to knock out Neil Magny potentially. And then, but I actually favored Neil Magny in that fight. I was like, oh, I think, you know, Neil Magny being the veteran, being more experienced, I'm like, I think he might be able to pull this off. But then, you know, his legs got destroyed. So I don't know what kind of a game plan Ian Gary has going into this, but I think whatever game plan he had going into that fight, I don't think it's going to work on Luque. I think he's going to have to be really creative against Luque. And I mean, I think, gosh, I don't know. I mean, he's got good striking, but so does Luque. So it's hard to say. I think just because of the momentum, he's young, he's hungry. I am leaning towards Ian Gary a little bit. Also with all, and this is just funny, but like with all the trash talk and all the drama, the controversy, to me, Ian Gary seems like the type of person who thrives on that. I think that's only going to help him in this fight. And it's funny because all the people that are talking trash, none of them are even his opponent. His opponent's hardly saying anything, which is hilarious. Which also, I think, kind of just shows the character of Luque and who he is as a person. Like, he's just not the type of guy to get involved in stuff like that. But I do lean a little bit towards Ian Gary just because he's young, he's hungry. You know, he's got so much momentum, his confidence. I do think those things play a bigger factor than we think, but it's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be easy. I don't know if he'll be able to finish Luque. I don't know. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah. By the way, to your point, I mean, I don't think it's unfair. It's like, bro, you had a brain injury. Like, I want you to have a long life and all this. You know? That's not unfair. I think that's completely reasonable. Look, you broke down the points really well. Just the way their styles match up with each other. I think that look, when you talk about age, and I'll bring this up again with Wonder Boy and Shavkat, one of the things that helps is reflexes and reaction. You're more likely to get those in your favor in a close fight, right? That's just one of the things that comes with aging. You know, as much experience as you have, sometimes seeing it and doing something about it, you know, fighters admit themselves, it's like, my ability to get those moments more, you know, when you're older compared to where you're younger is just a thing. It just really is. That being said, you have to execute a good game plan if you're Ian Gary. I think that, you know, Luque is a powerful guy himself. So I think that the winner, honestly, is going to be the one that uses the most weapons. I think when you talk about that, Luque is more comfortable going to the grappling and everything else.
Yeah.
That would favor Luque. That being said, you tell me this gets into a 15-minute, you know, kickboxing match. Can't say I hate Ian Gary's chances the way he looked against Neil Magny. I agree with you. He should have, you know, it felt like you would think he'd be able to get this one, but it played out the way he did. I think that is a very fixable problem. I think that's something that if I'm his coach, if I'm him, I feel like I watched that tape and I'm like, oh, I definitely can learn and do something different in my next fight if I'm in a similar scenario. So I don't put too much away from Gary. He is still learning. He isn't top four yet. He's like, I think they're like 9-11, something to that effect. Anyway, the fact is a winnable fight for both men. The grappling is the X factor. I think the one that uses more grappling easily runs away with it, because I think the other will probably struggle if it becomes that kind of fight. So I'll leave ultimate picks. I'll leave picks off just in case we want to interview these people. And, you know, next thing you know, the one thing you learn is you, and you know this, you'd be surprised who watches everything.
Oh, I know.
It's like, and it's like, you saw that? And it's like, and I'm like, bro, you couldn't wrestle good two fights ago. Sorry. Anyway, you know, look, so let's go to the, so, to your other point, the whole Ian stuff, first off, this man comes from the Chael Sonnen, Conor McGregor school of nice things don't sell fights.
Correct.
You ask Chael, you ask Colby, you ask Conor, if you don't get a little controversial, if you don't put a toe over the line that you are not supposed to cross, people don't react to it. If everything's just like, you know what, Bree, your gray sweater isn't that cute, Bree, and your black microphone with matching headphones isn't up, you don't care. But if I said something else, people would be like, oh, now it's on, right? You get what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, so I think with the whole Luque and the baptism thing, he is coming from the Conor McGregor school of, let's make some money, bro. Let me really get loud and say something. Same thing he did with Neil. And built up that thing. And I get it. Neil has a right to be angry with Ian over what he said. Same way Jeff Neal with the mugshot shirt has a right to be mad over that whole thing too. But once again, look how much it put Ian in the spotlight. All this stuff with Leon Edwards. Sean Strickland, it's weird because Sean kind of started taking aim at Ian, but they can't fight. So it's like, wait, you know, Ian almost ironically caught astray from a guy he can't even do anything about, at least right now. So it's like, well, you know, it's a very odd thing. I agree with you. I think that, you know, I think you'd have to ask Ian, well, is this what you wanted? Everyone to talk about you, even if they're not Luke. He may not admit it publicly. Yeah, I bet that was
100%.
The point.
This is only growing his popularity for
yes.
sure.
And look, he yeah. knows that.
And if he wins, this is just going to skyrocket him.
Yeah. Now, mind
sure.
you, look.
If he loses, it's going to be tough.
Look, and he knows that. Look, he saw Connor. Just like you and I see Connor, what goes up must come down. When you're talking
yep.
big and winning, it's beautiful. When you're talking big and losing, man, the way the internet just, you know, it's like you throw gas on the fire. Let's be real. So,
yeah.
And look, Rhonda had that same thing happen. This is part of it. If Rhonda didn't talk the way she did, she would not be, you know, ba-dum, you know, huge. But she did. And it created a money-making machine for her that she's still riding. You know, that's how this works. You know, there's a part of it. Not everyone is comfortable with that, and that's okay. I would not be comfortable saying all those things if I were a fighter. I'm like, no, like, I want people to like me personally. I don't have that. Ian, I think he made peace with that a long time ago. Colby Covington
yep.
made peace with that before he got cut. Now look where he is on Saturday. It's a very real thing, is all I'm getting at. And I agree with you. I think that I'm not saying there's not pressure. There definitely is. I think more so the stuff about his wife. I think having to answer these things about his family, I think that's a different element. But one thing I will say from having interacted with him and his wife and talking to them about their relationship, I think there's a very much a, you know, this is what we signed up for. I know going
yeah.
in, like if I, like his wife knows, my husband says some stuff. I know going in that I'm the one by his side and I might catch some strays. Now, mind you, I think the internet, I posted a thing and the comments were really hilarious in that she explained the truth. I reposted it and multiple, and I'm serious, multiple people said, well, I know that the truth now, but it's more fun to act about like the theories were the truth. Like, it's more fun to think that, you know, her ex-husband does live with him and has him on a vegan diet. And it's like, did you really just write that out loud on the internet? Is that what they're not real people to these people. They're characters on a TV
right.
show like Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse. They're not
yeah.
real. So you feel like you could say whatever. And it's like, it's a very weird thing. So I think that Layla and them know that, but you have to think there's more pressure. Ian won't say it, but he knows there is too. And how can there not be? So how
yeah.
he handles that will be very telling, win or lose, for sure.
For sure. Yeah. Well, in if he didn't want all this spotlight, he could have just ignored MMA Guru and not said anything about it. So it's like secretly, I think he does kind of like it, likes the controversy, and especially sometimes in relationships, you know, especially with a fighter, it's like they have that us against the world kind of mentality. And so it might be fun for them. I don't know. They might
I
be
agree.
Loving this, like kind of deep down, you know, but yeah, I mean, I think that either way, it's only gonna, I mean, people are talking about Ian Garry, and if you're fighting, you want people to talk about you, whether it's good or bad, because
oh, yeah.
then they're definitely going to watch you fight. And if you could put on a good performance, you're going to gain some of those people that were talking trash are going to become fans of you. So
I had a fighter tell me this, and they had kind of turned heel a little bit. They didn't used to be the kind of person who talked a lot, but they told me it's like, you know, like you have to get people. Sometimes you have to say some things because some people, believe it or not, they'll love it and they'll get that you're
yeah.
doing a thing and they attach themselves to you so much more. Some people don't like it and that's just part of the game, but said like, you kind of have to be if you truly want people invested in you one way or another. And I'm like, you know, and it, truth be told, I think that's a real thing. And I think that, you know, it's obviously changed the lives of people like Connor and Chael. And I think that
yes.
Ian recognizes that. And that's why he's kind of taken, you know, just further stepped himself into the playbook, so to speak. So I think he knows that completely. All this stuff, it's not on accident for Ian Gary, for sure.
Yeah, 100%.
Moving on, this is, let's be real, some people feel like this could be a heartbreaker. A lot of people have a lot of feelings about the matchmaking. Tony Ferguson against Patty Pimblett. On paper, it has the potential to be a very fun fight. I think yes. That, you know, there's no two ways around that. When you look at, I'll be real, and I say this on other episodes of my show, I don't want to count how many Tony has lost in a row. It makes me sad. Yes, I know what I would say if he wasn't a fan favorite. I know what I would say if he wasn't once the 1B in the lightweight division to Habib's 1A. I know what I would say if I saw another fighter on such a skid. I know what I would say. But I get it. It's Tony. And a lot of people ride or die for this dude the way he rides or dies for those sunglasses every fight week. I love it. I'm down with it. This is obviously do or die for Tony. I think that Patty is the kind of guy that 2019 Tony Ferguson handles. 2023 Tony Ferguson, there's a reason why this is a competitive fight. It's a lot closer. Patty, one of those guys, very physical, very durable, obviously very aggressive, gets after it when he's in the cage. All of this makes for a lot of fun. Patty Pimblett, coming off the injury, year-long layoff. Not for nothing, his personal public profile is very different. The way that fans reacted to the whole thing with Ariel last year and all that. I'm not going to get into the whole thing, but I will say when you do a public argument and one guy has receipts, every now and then things backfire. I don't think that was the best. The way it ended up wasn't the best thing for Patty Pimblett. Now, that being said, that's his problem with Ariel. He's still the same guy he was before that fight. He's still doing his own thing. He's not completely wrong to say, well, I don't want to do as many interviews. Time is money. Now, mind you, there's a whole other, me and Eddie Law did a show about that. If you haven't seen it, ask me, message me. I'll send you the link to that episode. That's not completely the craziest thing. Can't really say it in interviews, but that's another story. The fact is, Patty Pimblett is still what he was last year. Up and coming contender, very exciting talent. Very exciting personality. You beat a guy like Tony Ferguson, you get this train back on the tracks and you are still moving forward at a time when there's two English champions. The return to England next year, if you're Patty and you're healthy, you are a big part of that card. And he knows that if he beats a guy like Tony Ferguson. So I think there's, you know, I think it's very fair to say this is a high stakes fight for both guys. Regardless of the fact that Patty has more years in the game left than Tony.
Yeah, I think that is one thing that does work to Patty's advantage is just that he doesn't have the miles on him that Tony does. But when I'm looking at this fight, and a lot of people probably think I'm crazy, but I do think this is the most winnable fight for Tony, I think, that we've seen in a while. Because if you look at it, you know, who has he lost to? Well, Justin Gaethje was kind of the beginning of the end for him a little bit. You know, that was when that fight, I think, took a real toll on him. He took a lot of damage in that fight. And he, you know, I think that could have been partially a mental thing, too, because he was supposed to be fighting for a title. He's supposed to be fighting Habib. He's been preparing for this Habib fight for so long. He never got that fight. And I think that has stuck with him. I think that animosity and that just... I never got that fight. I never got the chance to beat the best in the world. He got screwed
out of the opportunity.
Yes. I think that has stuck with him. And that's why I actually love that he has been training with David Goggins. I love it because I do think, and everybody's been saying like, oh, it's not a mentality thing. It's a skill thing. I'm like, Tony's skills have always been there. Tony's skill is the least of his problem. I think Tony's mentality, I think, honestly, I think we're going to see just a different version of Tony from that. I really do. And I don't know, you know, it's hard to predict this fight, honestly. I'm always going to ride with Tony because I've just been such a big fan. I've been so inspired by him, even from watching from The Ultimate Fighter, you know, the chicken salad, and all the way to now. It's like, I just love Tony. But watching Patty's last fight and then watching Tony's last fight, I do think Bobby Green, way tougher fight, in my opinion, than Patty. I think Bobby's just more unpredictable. He's got more tools in his toolbox. He's got so much experience. And most of the guys that Tony has fought have been very experienced. Michael Chandler, you know, Bobby Green, Charles Oliveira, you know, look at how many fights they've had. So now he's fighting somebody who's way less experienced than him. And to me, it's like it could go one of two ways. You know, it's like Patty could get this big win for his resume and, you know, he could end up maybe submitting him. I don't know. I don't see Patty knocking out Tony. I don't know if that's, I don't know. I just don't see it happening. I could see him maybe like hurting Tony and then getting a submission or something like that maybe happening. But to me, when I look at Patty, he fights with his chin high up in the air. His hands are low. I don't think you can fight Tony like that. And I think we even saw a little bit of that in the Bobby Green fight because Tony hurt Bobby in that fight before the eye poke. And I think if Tony can channel that and keep that going, and I do think that, you know, the focus that he's put into his cardio and his conditioning and all that, I think could possibly make him, you know, a little faster. Because I think that's been the biggest lacking we've seen from Tony is just the lack of speed. You know, he seems like he slowed down a little bit. But how much of that could be, you know, partially just a mental thing? Of just, you know, maybe not having that confidence. And I think that Goggins could bring out that monster again, could bring out that confidence. And I think that's what we might see from Tony is a different, like a confident version, but not a fake confidence, like a real confidence of like, oh yeah, look at my highlights. Like, look how, look what I did to Anthony Pettis. Look what I did to these guys. Like, I'm Tony Ferguson. I think if he brings that back and knows what he has to do, throw those elbows and really get Patty in some bad positions, I think that he could win this fight. I really do. So it'll be interesting. I am kind of leaning towards Tony, honestly, just because of the way that Patty fights. You know, the fight with Jared Gordon, I honestly thought Jared Gordon won that fight. So and then with just the time off, and I don't know, I'm leaning towards Tony on this one. I really am.
I think it really comes down to executing with multiple weapons, similar to Luque. I think that when you start talking about Tony, look at his submission game. He's very dangerous when he's on the ground. If he gets Patty down, becomes a very different fight. Starts using all the weapons. I don't mean just punches, kicks. I mean elbows, knees. Really make Patty feel like he's walking into that buzzsaw, like guys and like Pettis and Cerrone did. That starts to favor Tony. Hesitation, too much patience, too much honestly waiting for Patty, that is the road to another L for Tony Ferguson. Yep, I think that if you see Tony out there waiting for Patty too much, it's probably not going his way. Just because that's when, look, I gotta say, you got me thinking, man, have I been watching a different Tony Ferguson? You did a good job of selling me on the Goggins effect. I want to tell you right now. That being said, the numbers are what they are on the age and all that.
Yep.
And I think that if you're going to turn back Father Time and take back a few rounds from Father Time, you got to get after a guy like Patty Pimblett. You can't wait for him. And I think that that's really the thing. That's where the age and all that for Patty. He's a very fun guy to watch. He is a dangerous guy. You don't want to just walk in and bang with a guy like him. He can take it. He can bring it. He enjoys a fight like that, if we're being quite honest. So yep. I think that all those things, that's when you start talking about Tony Ferguson. I agree with you. Winnable fight stylistically. I think the fact that Patty's coming off the injury, also a big deal. I think the fact that he has something to prove to himself a little bit, you know, that's another intangible that could be up for grabs for Tony. That being said, you know, it's really about executing it out there. I think that the one that executes it will win this fight more so than who has better striking, who has better grappling, who does better in these positions. I think it's about who's the guy who handles it more mentally and just goes for it and gets after it. Because I think that if we get into one of these patient, I wait for you, you wait for me, that's really a pick'em fight. I think the one I think the one who wins the first round is going to win the fight. I'll say it like that, quite bluntly. Doesn't matter if it goes 15. Doesn't matter if it goes a close 15. For winner of the first round will win the fight. That's my prediction. So,
I agree. Well, and look at Tony's first round in a lot of his fights. I mean, even the ones that he's lost, he's done pretty well. So
you're trying to convince me, I could tell. No, I feel, look, I love Tony. Honestly, really, really do. Really cool guy, Southern California guy. I've seen him a bunch of times at events. So nice to everybody. I love Tony too. I don't want this to be the end objectively. I don't care who he's fighting. Yeah. He could be fighting my grandma. Don't want to see Tony lose. It would break my heart like it breaks a lot of other fans' hearts. He's given so much. He's become, he has very much been one of those guys to a lot of fans over the years that really, you know, what, when you talk about what makes you a UFC fan, a guy like Tony, not just the personality, but the style. And I was talking about this, it was when we talked about the Korean Zombie's retirement with Max Holloway. Not every Hall of Fame career is about how much gold you had and these records and numbers. Some of them, it's about how did you make the audience feel when you were out there? And Tony Ferguson is very much that fighter to so many fans. It, you know, people ride or die with him. They get up off their feet to see what he would do. You stood up when he walked out because you knew that the man was here. And the guy who's going to bring the excitement, you know, this is where the fun begins. When you hear his music come on, that's who Tony Ferguson is to a lot of fans, myself included.
I agree.
And I think that, you know, when you have a guy like that, you don't want it to end the way it feels like it could end on Saturday with, you know, it's not the same, it's this and that. So I completely get it. It's not unfair to say that. The cards will fall the way they're going to fall on Saturday, but I want to give Tony Ferguson his flowers. He will always be that guy to fans, no matter what happens on Saturday. And for that, you want him to have at least one more good night if this is where we think we're at in his career. You know what I mean?
100%.
Oh,
yeah,
my God. I feel like
it'd be
just
interesting.
They need to play that on his video package at the Hall of Fame. Anyway, let's keep moving our way up the list. This one, very fun to a lot of people. Steven Wonderboy Thompson against the big cat, Shavkat Rakhmonov. You know, the fun thing about this one is that on the feet has so much potential to be a fun fight, even more fun than Wonderboy against Kevin Holland. I think, though, the thing about Shavkat, he's very much like Alex Pereira in that way that, like, you know, he has a sense of humor, but he just doesn't say a lot. He just doesn't do a lot. He just kind of goes out there and just gets people out of there. 100% finish rate, still undefeated, all this good stuff. The age is the biggest thing in this fight. On the feet, very competitive fight, but all things equal, I think that the age is where you really see it, because like I just talked about earlier, your ability to react and take action when you see openings, that is a huge part of it. And when you have a killer like Shavkat, being able to catch a guy like that with so many weapons when he's coming at you is huge. And that's where Steven Thompson is like, you have to be perfect, because a guy who can attack you on the ground like this, the guy who can hurt you on the feet like this, that becomes a very different ball game. And I think that younger Steven Thompson handles this. You know, this iteration that has admitted, I'm in it, you know, this is the last ride, that's a different ball game now. And love Steven Thompson. I think he's going to show up for himself on Saturday. But you have to be perfect to beat a guy like the best Shavkat. I don't know that Shavkat has to be as perfect. And that may be a little unfair, but that's how I'm feeling right now.
I agree 100%. I think that skill-wise, I think Wonderboy has more skill. But I think that Shavkat just has too much momentum, being 17-0, undefeated in the UFC, and being the younger fighter. And yeah, I just don't know that this is a great fight for Wonderboy. Now, there's always a chance, because I've slept on Wonderboy before, and then he ended up proving me wrong. So it's hard to say.
Kevin Holland was going to get him, didn't you?
No, I thought Jeff Neal was. I thought Jeff Neal. Yeah. So it's hard to bet against him, but at the same time, I just think that Shavkat has too much momentum going for him right now, and I think that he has the potential to be a champion at some point. So I think that I'm gonna probably favor Shavkat in this one.
Is okay, would it be fair to say that Shavkat is the guy behind Bilal Muhammad with the victory in terms of the title picture?
I think so.
I agree. I think that
I think he'll get a title shot before Ian Garry for sure.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think that Ian so it's funny because I talked to Ian about it. Ian really wanted the Wonder Boy fight. He was telling me in an interview, I could see if Wonder Boy wins, I could see Ian and Wonder Boy be in the fight. I think if Shavkat wins, he's not getting Ian Garry. They're moving him up the ladder. And
I agree.
You know, if Kamaru Usman comes back down to 170, that's his fight. If, you know, where are we at with Bilal and Islam? But, you know, Shavkat is just right there. I think that it's weird. He's one of those guys. Trying to compare him to someone. The only guy I could really compare him to is Pereira. Just like, there's clearly a language barrier. It doesn't say much, but fans just eat this up. You see it, you watch it like I do. They just, it's like, nah. And it's a vibe. And I think that, you know, less is more with a guy like Shavkat. Don't say much. Let the fans just like use their imagination. I think that's why they like him a lot. I think that he's just riding that momentum. For Wonder Boy, I think you get a guy like Ian who would just beat a guy like... to be honest, I think Wonder Boy fights the winner of that either way. I think enough time has passed that the Luque rematch would be fine. Clearly, the Ian Garry fight would be bigger with the noise Ian Garry would be making, but I think that that's the fight that he gets. I don't know. Now, the more people talk about it, the less likely I think that Kamaru Usman is going back to 170. Almost feel like he feels like his money fights are at 85, ironically. And it's like, I think as long as Leon Edwards is the champion, I can see Kamaru saying, well, you know, there's more in it for me over here than being third from the top against another welterweight. Okay, that's fair. So, yeah, it's very interesting, but I just see, you see the path for Shavkat, you see the path for Wonderboy. Final note on this one. Are you surprised that of these four men, Luque, Garry, Shavkat, Wonderboy, that none of them are being considered the backup for the title fight?
I'm not really that surprised, I would say. I think Bilal being the backup makes a lot of sense.
Meritocracy, yes. Logistically, I'm a little floored. You have four great welterweights and you're telling me you don't want to just save the money?
That's true. Yeah, I guess like half the division is fighting on this card.
Talk about why don't the ranked welterweights fight each other? And then the second they do, but we still need a backup. What? just saying. Now, meritocracy, this is Bilal's spot, should be Bilal.
I guess I don't see this fight falling through. I don't know. What do you think?
I completely agree. I think that Colby Covington will fight. Colby Covington will walk with a limp to the octagon before he pulls out of this, in my opinion, personally.
Yeah.
Same thing for Leon Edwards.
He's not going to get another title shot. There's too many guys waiting. And
He kind of got the benefit of the promotion and all this.
He got lucky with this one, honestly.
I'll say this. I'm not saying that he is the reason Donald Trump is showing up. I think, you know, which number is he? 45? I think number 45 would have shown up regardless because he's cool with Dana. But I do think that it moved up his priority list because Colby is there. I'm okay saying that. I'm okay admitting that. I think that honestly, that whole effect in Florida, I think that is a big part. And mind you, that's okay. I have a feeling this isn't like your cross-section of sports and entertainment fandom. But you see how much of a big deal it is to have Taylor Swift at a football game this last 4 months? I think Dana White sees the Donald Trump effect the same way. It's like, you know, it's a, you know, if Colby can bring a guy like this to our fights, he is getting the fight. Okay.
100%.
Fair enough. I mean, look what it does. Look, whatever your political affiliation, that is a big name, no doubt, no two ways around it, at your event consistently one guy. So I think that's a big part of how Colby got this fight. It's just that he has this. He's obviously a big name. And I'd argue this, and I know we have one more fight before we talk about them. Colby is almost the perfect opponent for Leon in that Leon doesn't talk a lot. So Colby will look like a big deal beating a guy like Leon. But two, Leon will look a bigger deal beating Colby because Colby sold it for him. Let's be real.
100%.
The heat is going to be much higher than it was for Kamaru and Leon in England. I'll say it right now.
I
And I think that
agree.
in that way, that is why you sold it more so than I'll say it. I don't think that Bilal could talk like Colby can. I don't think that for his best effort, for both of them, Leon and Bilal would have been able to sell a fight better than Colby and Leon. I'll say that
Yeah,
right now.
Colby is a huge draw, and I think that just the character that he's created is half the reason for it, because it's like the other fighters have to do it like as themselves, and Colby has created this character that's almost like his own like alternate ego, I guess.
Oh yeah.
So
And mind you, I know it's because a lot of people want to see the villain be destroyed. Like you want to see Iron Man snap Thanos out of existence back. I get it. I really do. I just think that it's the perfect foil for a guy like Leon to boost him up because it's not just, the styles and, for example, that fight bananas, you guys had that amazing edit of the red coat Leon against Paul Revere Colby on your Instagram. Oh my God, I saved that photo. I need to share it sometime this week, but I was like, oh
I
my
thought that
God,
was pretty funny.
I got such a kick out of that. It's perfect. Loud guy versus quiet guy, it sells. It works. And that is really a big part of Colby getting this against Leon, in my opinion. And in which way?
Yeah.
That's why I'm like, all right, that's how he got it over Bilal, quite simply. Let's keep going. We got a great co-main event. Alexandre Pantoja taking on Brandon Royval. Rematch. I believe Pantoja got him. How did he win that one? I thought he got the finish, no? Did Pantoja? Let me look back at it. But fact is, Pantoja, one of the things about him, I know a lot of people
I
keep
can't
a.
remember if that was a decision or if it was a TKO. Was
Maybe.
Brandon Moreno the TKO, maybe?
Yeah, I thought I know Moreno stopped what's his name? Royval.
Royval.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold
I
on.
think Pantoja
Submission.
might be.
Pantoja subbed Royval in 21. It was first round. So anyway, so one of the things it's a weird thing. Pantoja very much is like Leon in this way. Doesn't talk a lot, but when you look at Pantoja's resume, Moreno three times, one on Ultimate Fighter. Royval, Manel Cape. I think the only person he's lost to is Figueiredo, who isn't even in the division anymore. I
And
think I just
who's
said
probably about
Royval.
to crush it at bantamweight.
Yeah, but it's like, dude, it's like Pantoja at flyweight. I mean, I love Moreno just like a lot of people do. I don't know that there's a guy with a better flyweight resume than Pantoja. And I saw this brought up like, yeah, only Demetrius Johnson has a better UFC flyweight record in terms of competition. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It makes me disappointed that, Cejudo's committed to 35 because I think that would have been a great test too. I mean, imagine having Cejudo in that mix. I mean, the run Pantoja is on is amazing. I understand why maybe fans aren't as amped up about it in that way. The fact is, this is kind of like the Moreno Pantoja trilogy. It's an exciting fight every time out. Brandon Royval brings it. I think he's one. He just burst out of the gate when he got to UFC in 2020. Had some ups and downs. Is on an even better run, if you ask me, because now people know about him. He's not as much of an unknown, and he's still executing. He's still performing well, getting finishes, shooting his shot. I think it's great. I think that it makes for a fun fight once again. Two dynamic guys, well-rounded, bring it. The thing is, as good of a run as Royval is on, Pantoja, it's kind of like Figueiredo when he was the champion. You need something special if you're even going to threaten a guy like this because he's just been at such a high level for so long now. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that this is a very difficult fight for Royval. I do think that of everybody in the division, I think there was really only two options, in my opinion. It was either rematch Moreno or fight Royval. So I'm kind of glad they gave Royval the title shot, honestly, because it's like, you never know. To me, this just looks like a, I don't want to say this is going to be a easy fight for Pantoja, because I think Brandon Royval is going to bring a tough fight. But I just think that the run that Pantoja's been on, and just, and the, to his credit, though, to Moreno's credit, he gave Pantoja a tough fight, even with what was his hand broken in like the first or second round. So I think that, you know, it was a competitive fight. I will give him that. So I don't think this is going to be easy for Pantoja by any means. I could see him maybe submitting him again, or maybe a decision this time. Maybe it does go all five rounds and Royval, you know, maybe it's a fun war. I mean, that would be fun. I think that would be really cool if they had like a fight of the night type of fight. But I don't know. I mean, you never know with Royval. He's definitely dangerous no matter what. So I do see this rematch just being Pantoja, I think, has improved a little bit more than Royval, in my opinion.
I think that he's just better at executing the game plan. I think that Royval, not that he isn't absolutely working hard also. I think that stylistically, you know, a lot of his also athleticism is really carried in past fights, which is all that matters. You get the W, you get the L. You know, at the end of the day, how you got there isn't what people talk about all the time as much as were you able to get it, yes or no. That being said, I think that Pantoja's comfort using those multiple weapons. I think that he gets into a long striking fight, he likes it. He gets into a long grappling fight, he's good with it. You know, from the back, from the top position, he's just got a little bit more ease, you know, just transitioning between the different ones. I think that Royval, maybe not quite up to the same level. That being said, it's not like he's bad in a lot of those positions either. So it makes for a very interesting fight. It makes for a very fun one. There's a reason Pantoja's the favorite. It's because of all the things I said at the beginning of this segment. He's on that special run that I think is really, you just recognize as a fan and as a spectator. Royval is a live dog in this one. He could easily catch him. He could easily outpace him and just get, you know, get fist to face a few more times, and this becomes a very interesting fight, right? It's not unheard of. That being said, you talk about best Pantoja, best Royval. I think there's a reason why Pantoja is the heavy favorite, and that's just where we're at. I mean, flyweight, I gotta say. So Moreno is the backup. I'm not gonna lie. I really thought they'd go Manel. I was a little shocked, but I get it. People love Moreno like their favorite ice cream. You don't care when you get it. You just know it's always good. So you just hold on to it, Brie. I mean, what do you think? What do you think of the decision to kind of name Moreno as the guy on deck?
I think just because it was such a competitive fight with Pantoja, I think, and also just the opponent. I mean, Manel Cops' last fight was somebody making their debut, versus Moreno fought the current champion. So I can see that. Now, how many times have they fought? Three times?
Three.
Him and Pantoja?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is a little kind of like, do we really need to see them fight again? but at the same time, I think that it makes sense just because the fight was competitive. If it wasn't a competitive fight, I would say let's give Manel Cop a shot at the belt. But since it was a competitive fight and Moreno was injured, that factoring into it, I think I could watch those guys fight 10 times and I would still be entertained. So
for Moreno, it's great, obviously. There are times when I feel like it's kind of like bit of Islam and all that. It becomes high risk, low reward. Of course Moreno's tough. Yeah, of course it's tough to beat him. But it's like Pantoja's like, how many times do you need me to beat this guy? Like, I mean, it's like Vulcan Max. It's like, bruh.
It
like,
is kind of like that.
You like him that much, you need to give him three shots to beat me? Like, what the heck? I think, but then again, Pantoja's beaten everybody. He's just happens to have beaten Moreno most times.
Right.
So I get it, but personally for me, and maybe this is me as someone who, like my running joke is when people ask me, Gabriel, did you see the fight? And it's like, bro, just for future reference, always assume I saw the fight. Like it's my job. Like, people will sometimes ask me, did you watch it? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Did you wake up this morning? Of course I did. It's what I get paid to do. So it's like I always want something a little different, something we haven't seen too much of. So in that way, I really feel like Manel, but okay, Moreno. I like Moreno too. It's not like I don't, but that's just me personally speaking, as someone who ingests a lot of this content. So
I think
that's
it
where I
would be
stand.
really fun though to see Manel Cop fight for a title. I think that
Oh
would be really
yeah.
interesting.
Oh, and also, especially after he's coming to his own on the microphone, lack of political correctness notwithstanding, yeah, it's just very I think it's a good time at flyweight. I think that
Yes.
Moreno Albazi was the fight to make. I think that you should line up Manel for the winner of this one, and then just Moreno Albazi winner, number three in line. Let's go. So
What was the deal with Cara France in that fight? Did he get hurt? And that's why he had to pull out?
I thought he hurt himself like a week before, so he couldn't take Manel in Australia.
Yeah, I'm curious what's gonna be next for him.
I am too, I guess, because I feel like he's had those close fights now. I get
Yeah.
if you gave him the win
The
over
fight with
Albazi, it's
Albazi
not
was
the
close.
oh yeah, very
Yeah.
close. I don't know. I mean, he gets the odd man out, obviously, when they dance again. So I think that'll be
Yep.
where we go from there. And let's save the best for last. Leon Edwards, Colby Covington, welterweight title. I mean, we kind of already previewed the personality, so let's just talk about the fight. Year and a half-ish layoff, probably a little more would change for Colby. Leon Edwards fighting a guy who's been beaten twice by Kamaru Usman. That does, but it's MMA math. It isn't apples to apples.
For sure.
I think the thing about this one, honestly, it comes down to what level is Colby at this age, after this layoff, and everything else. I think it's really everything we haven't seen. Where is Colby at since his last performance? Because I think if he can execute the way he did against Masvidal, the way he did it, in all honesty, against Kamaru in the second fight, even though it didn't go his way, I think that guy has a great chance against a guy like Leon Edwards, particularly what we saw from Leon in the second fight with Kamaru. Kamaru wasn't able to do the same things in the third fight that he did for the majority of the second fight. I think that Leon Edwards could have problems with the best Colby Covington. That being said, layoff, age, all these things start to add up. And if Colby is a little bit off of that high water mark, that really opens the door for a guy like Leon, who is so well-rounded, so tough, very experienced, is really hitting his stride as a champion. And I think his own confidence, all of it's just really coming together. It makes for a very fun fight, but I think this fight, ironically, is more about the intangibles from Colby than it is about any of the X's and O's, the cardio, the wrestling, and everything else we already know.
Yeah, I actually like the time off for Colby, which is probably a lot of people will disagree with me on this, but I think that his style of fighting is so hard on the body that I do think that possibly taking that time off and not being in fight camp, I think could actually help him because he's not wearing out his body like Usman. We've seen his knees just completely obliterated, and he's not able to wrestle the same way that he used to. I mean, he got taken down by Khamzat pretty easily. So I think that, yeah, I think that the time off could actually be a good thing for Colby. I think that looking at the Masvidal fight and then looking at this fight, I think Masvidal actually has a little bit better takedown defense than Leon, and Colby was able to take Masvidal down pretty easily in the first round. So I think when I look at that performance and then I look at Leon, I do think Leon is a more talented striker technically, like the technical skill side, but I think that Colby's wrestling could win him the fight. I think his wrestling, his cardio, obviously, those are things that he's known for. But I do think that, he doesn't have as many miles on him as Usman does, and arguably has probably as good of wrestling as Usman. So, yeah, to me, I think this actually is a good fight for Colby, and I think that we could potentially see a new champion. I don't know.
I mean, it just turns everything on its head, right? Because I think that real quick with welterweight division, this may be a conversation for Monday's show, but you have Islam talking about wanting to move up. Bilal's right there, potentially a guy like Shavkat, Kamaru Usman, if Colby's champion and you have Kamaru back at 170, it's like what do you even do with all this? It's just really wild.
Yep.
I think to me, a big part of it is got to do with just, I guess, what does Leon Edwards do to deal with the wrestling Colby? And I know that's kind of like, well, everyone's got that problem. But really, I think that Leon, age, experience, all of it, if a guy like him can't figure out a way as a striker primarily to keep a guy like Colby off, it just feels like it's no one can. I don't expect the Wonder Boy to be able to do it. I don't expect other people because Leon is such a well-prepared fighter every fight out for a lot of different styles of guys, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
For Colby, I like what you're saying on the time off. I double-checked this as you were talking because I feel like it's another thing to note. Colby turned 35 this February. And I'm sure you're aware that stat fighters over
Yep.
35 are like 38, no, 2-38 in title fights. And
Yeah.
it's like, if this fight happened last year, Colby Covington all day. Now I'm like, wait, I don't know what it is, but it's like your car doesn't go 100 anymore. It only goes 85 when you hit 35. I don't know why. Doesn't matter how much time off, doesn't matter how many stem cell replacements you have, it just happens, right? At least in UFC. I know a couple of vets. I mean, Chris Cyborg, Liz Carmouche still crushing it. I think honestly, it just comes down to the wrestling of Colby. I'm actually with
Yeah.
you there. I think it's when I break down the fight, it's the best weapon on either side. I think
Yes.
that
I think if Colby has a few failed takedowns, that might mess with his confidence a little bit. I think if Leon can keep it on the feet for long enough, then Colby might just get frustrated. And if he has to strike with Leon, that's just not gonna be fun for him.
Yeah, so I think that if the takedowns are on, obviously it's Colby, even if it goes to decision. But
Yeah.
yeah, I think that that's just where it's at. I think it's the best weapon. So if that's on, and I think that the age and the essentially the level Colby is at, if age and layoff gets to him, they're not going to be there. If it hasn't gone to them, they will be there for him. And we're probably saying and new on Saturday. So it makes for a very fun fight. But mind you, he's got to be at that level. Leon Edwards isn't coming over to Vegas to take an L against Colby Covington of all people. I
No.
am sure he's been training like a madman. Sure, they've been drilling sprawls and body locks and everything else in between all, for the last 8 months. I'm sure of it. So makes for a fun fight, makes for an interesting one. I mean, the future, okay, I'll put it this way. Could you see anybody jumping the line ahead of Bilal Muhammad?
If Islam moves up, I could
For
see that
sure.
happening.
I feel like it's kind of like 1A and 1B. I give Bilal on meritocracy, maybe because, I'm a little naive like that, and I think that should be more important. It often isn't. But, I don't know. I think that while Islam wants that, while Islam would prefer that, I think the UFC sees more money in Islam Gaethje first, and then talk
Interesting.
about that. I think Islam is saying the right things about Gaethje at 55.
Yeah.
I personally, I don't want to see Charles and him run it back. Sarukian and all that stylistically, but if I'm Islam, I don't want Sarukian. Give me Gaethje or the welterweight
Yeah, I think
title.
Sarukian needs a little more time.
I think personally, I think it should be Saruki and Charles next. And
Yes.
you know, the person who gets that, okay, now you're really throwing down the gauntlet back at Makhachev. But yeah, I just think that I think the money fight just before you go up to welterweight is Islam and Gaethje, because then Islam looks like such a bigger killer
Yes.
going into a welterweight title fight. I think right now, you know, just, and maybe this is just a victim of his own success, it's almost like he's made it feel too easy against
Well, I also
Charles.
think that it's going to be a while before he even has the opportunity to fight for the 170 title, because look at how often both of these guys fight. Colby fights, once a year at most,
That's true.
and Leon fights, probably on app, if you averaged it out, probably once a year. So, yeah, I think it might be a while before he can even have the opportunity to fight. So if he wants to fight in March, April, then it'll probably be Gaethje.
That's a good point. Oof, I don't know. I'm thinking, because we have a seasonal press conference this Friday, and I can just like imagine it's like on top of Chito versus O'Malley, and now, and then you have Justin Gaethje show up and you have Islam show up, and I'm like, oh my God. I don't know. I could see the UFC just saying, you know what, we're just gonna pull the trigger, and like Islam Leon, Islam Colby. I just don't like seeing a guy like Bilal get screwed out of those shots,
Yeah, I
but
agree.
I also know there's money on the table there
Yes.
that's very enticing. But
Especially because if Islam is going to fight, let's say he fights in April, I mean, that could be UFC 300. So
yeah,
are they going to put Bilal in UFC 300? I doubt it,
I mean, that's
So.
another question. We could cap off the show with that, but yeah, I think that I could see like an International Fight Week though. Title unifier, that always feels like a, you know, can't go wrong with that one kind of deal.
Yeah.
Ideally, Islam Gaethje Bilal fights the winner of this one. Very close second, Islam moving up to fight the winner of this one. And I think that depends on how they execute the potential selling of the fight, who says
Yes.
what, and kind of really, you know, like if Leon and Colby start, like let's say Islam is in the crowd. Just hypothetically, I doubt he will be, but let's say, and Colby or Leon just starts jawing at him, you know, from the cage, do it right there. They did it. If they're just like, I'll take anybody, I don't care, then it's like, y'all drop the ball, let it go. Bilal and Gaethje get their shots.
Yeah, I think if Colby wins, I think that's a much easier fight to sell him versus Islam. But then also, it's like, well, do you give Leon an immediate rematch? Most likely, I would think he would get a rematch if Colby wins. So, yeah, there's a lot of factors at play.
I guess Bilal Muhammad, if he's got to wait for an immediate rematch, I just, it's like, you know what? I'm turning into the
Yeah.
actors. I'm going on strike too. Shoot.
Yeah.
It's like, what more do you want? Yeah, but I get what you're saying for sure. Let's cap it off with some fun stuff. Bree, I'm sure you think about UFC 300. I mean, what are some fights you would love to see there?
I definitely want to see a lightweight title fight, I think, at UFC 300. I think lightweight has always been known as the most stacked division. And with the timing of it, Islam, he usually fights September, October, March, April. So I think that the timing could work out perfectly. And I think that that would just be such an exciting way to celebrate UFC 300 with a lightweight title fight. And then I'm trying to think of what else I would want to see. I wouldn't even be mad at like a heavyweight title fight also with Tom Aspinall with his last performance. The problem is that I don't think John Jones is going to be back soon enough, so
What about Tom and Cyril Gane? Because personally, I would like that at 300.
I do like that fight. It probably not as a main event. Maybe a co-main event, but I do really like that fight. I think that is probably stylistically one of the best fights you can make at heavyweight right now.
I will say, like, with respect to Jailton Almeida, who I think meritocracy probably should get it. You know, he's on the run. I think stylistically it's just more fun with Gon. Yeah. I think knowing that John and Stipe are not going to fight him, you know, they haven't said that. I'll say it. John and Stipe are not going to fight Ciryl Gane. John fighting Ciryl Gane again. I think that opens the door that you can have Ciryl versus Tom, and it's more sellable, to be honest with you. Even though, you know, the John Jones fight was, you know, a year ago. I think, little curveball, Connor, Nate Diaz, number three. Think they're going to give that one to the fans and be like, you know what? Once again, favorite ice cream, like that McDonald's golden fry.
I love it. It
doesn't matter
where it
is. I could
watch that fight 100 times.
Yeah, I feel like, okay, there you go. UFC 300, biggest star in UFC history. Biggest, well, I guess, you know, one of the more iconic rivalries right there. Ciryl and Tom co-main event. I don't mind the lightweight title. I just feel like they're saving that to give them their own show with respect to 300. I think you add Khamzat as the third from the top. I don't know who I want Khamzat to fight, though. I don't know if I'd want you to try to rebook the Costa fight, or, you know what? It's UFC 300, Khamzat and Israel Adesanya.
And I just love that fight.
Yeah, and it's like, you know what? Let's just go crazy with the star power. But that's like my... If I'm UFC matchmaker or UFC just powers that be, with the pieces we have today, right now, you know, Monday, December 11th, that is my target for UFC 300. Put those three pieces together. Then, you know what? I think you need to give some love to the women. I think Erin Blanchfield and Manon Fiore should be on
that
pay-per-view.
That would be a fantastic fight, yes.
I don't know, how about... I feel like Sarukian gets someone else. How about Dustin Poirier with somebody as the last one, number five?
Yeah, who would he fight at lightweight?
Do you like Beneil Dariush, or do you think that ship sailed?
I don't think Dustin wants that fight. I think Dustin wants a money fight.
Oh, would you say then... I was going to say Michael Chandler, but... Michael Chandler, if I'm Michael Chandler and I get screwed out of the Conor fight in 300, I am not fighting on that undercard. You can just...
That would be kind of a slap
in
the face.
I'll go back to Bellator. I don't even
Michael Chandler
care.
Officially signed to PFL. Yeah.
For real. Sarukian then? Not enough.
I do. I don't know. I don't think he has the star power yet. I think the problem with Dustin is that there's not a lot of guys in that division that have the big name that, I guess, like, you know, Dariush, fight fans know who Dariush is, but to the general public, you know, he's not as big of a name as a Dustin Poirier or a Justin Gaethje, or, you know, I don't know. There's just not a ton of, I guess, big, like, names or, like, big fights that would really get Dustin excited. I guess. So, I don't know. I would love to see him on that card, though. I really would.
I don't know. I think I would go Dariush just because it feels like, you know what? You know, both coming off L's. It is what it is. You can't negotiate your way out of it right now. I think it's a very huge do or die crossroads. Poirier would carry the star power. You know what? Okay. Doesn't matter who he fights. I'll say Dariush. You give Poirier some of that hot sauce custom shorts, like Bryce Mitchell's. I think that that's it. I think that that's how you make that. That's how you sell that fight. I think that Aaron kind of sells itself, you know, next big thing, win streak, etc. I think that fight sells it. And then the big three just sell themselves. But I don't know. Anything else you know, what is your pie in the sky? What else does Brie want at 300?
I don't know. I really am curious, what is Rose going to do next?
That could be cool.
She's always been a big name. And I know she lost the fight, but it was a good fight with Firo, and Firo's obviously a lot bigger than her. But it's like, does she move back to strawweight? Does she stay at flyweight? Do we like Rose at flyweight? Are there any fun fights with Rose we can make at flyweight? I don't know, because she does have some star power, so.
Or the, let's call an audible, Tatiana Suarez moves up to fight Rose, flyweight.
I like that fight. I actually also like Hibas versus Nama Yunus.
Ooh,
they could
that
do
could
that
be
at
good.
flyweight. Because they both fought at flyweight and they're both around the same size. They just wouldn't have to cut weight. So I actually really like that fight.
I don't know. I feel like you gotta put one of the big name women coming up. And I know they're saving Alexa for like Cinco de Mayo or Mexican Independence in September. All right, that's fine. Obviously, Valentina's the B side to that, so that takes her off the board. And then when I think about the women, I don't want you to do Zhang Weili anywhere but China. If you know, I think that's the one thing that happened. I bet you they called and said, you know, I know they had to have asked Zhang Weili short notice, but could you do China in like 6 weeks? Like in, you know, the event that happened this weekend probably was just too soon. But I bet if they knew they could get Weili and Yan, they would have hell or high water kept it in Shanghai for sure. I feel like you save that fight for China, give them that. So in that way, let Tatiana move up, because I think either Tatiana or Aaron at 300, because I think that I would argue they're probably the two most popular women winning right now. You know, Aaron just on that win streak. And I know the fans just love Tatiana. I know, like, I see it in my stuff anytime I do something with her or post one of the posts about it, the numbers just keep doing well, even months later. And it's like, you know, she's just that girl. So I could see her at 300 against Rose if they don't do Aaron and Manon.
That would be fun.
Because I'm not married to the idea of Aaron and Manon has to be the co-main event or something to Alexa Valentina 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
I want to ask you, what is that book over your right shoulder?
That's David Goggins.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I'm not gonna lie. I know he's a
That's
guy.
That's why I'm so excited that he's training with Tony, because I'm a big David Goggins fan and I'm a big Tony fan.
Okay, all right, fair enough. I don't know. I've never, you know, like, I've never really just gotten into the whole thing. I know what their deal is. Like, I know it's the same vein as that guy who does the seminars where people walk on hot coals and things like that. I get it. I'm just, it's like, I don't know. I'm always
the
scared
best
that if
way to entry to David Goggins is probably to watch his episode with Rogan. I feel like that's the best way to break into David Goggins. And then you can start reading the books and stuff.
Fair enough. What is that light blue sign you have behind you? What's it say?
Oh, that is a Maya Angelou quote. It says, "Nothing will work again unless you do."
Okay. And then is that, I have a question with the Goggins book. Is that always there, or is that just because of our preview show?
No, it's always there.
Okay, fair enough. Respect. I appreciate I appreciate the monitor with the fight poster in the back. I appreciate the Brie on your side. I appreciate the retro UFC sweater. I really do. All right, I have another fun question. You have a very, you know, you get into your podcast. I mean, full respect. I don't know that I could talk that much by myself every week. That's why I have
get
a co-host.
It does get a little tiring sometimes.
That's why I have a co-host. I can't do it. I tried. I wish I could. I just don't.
Have the gift of gab.
You know, with someone else, I could do this. Like, we could go another 2 hours. I'll probably be fine, honestly.
Right.
By myself, though, I'm like, yeah, I think you guys are tired of it now, you know. All right. If you were to do a podcast on something not sports related, what would it be that you could talk about as much as you talk about MMA?
Wow. My gosh.
Like, what do you think?
Probably,
that is like, you know what, I could do that too for 2 hours a day, 2 hours a week.
I feel like I could probably talk about either music or stand-up comedy or movies.
Really?
Yeah, something entertainment. Yeah, because like I'm a big music person, and then also like I'm a big fan of stand-up comedy. I've been a fan of stand-up comedy for a long time, which is actually how I got into like Joe Rogan, which is kind of what got me not
Into
into
MMA.
MMA because I was already watching it, but that's what made me like really get into MMA because I learned more about the fighters like as human beings like from the interviews. And then that was kind of what made me more passionate about it, I guess. So Rogan kind of took my, I guess, MMA knowledge to a new level. So yeah, but that's how I got into Rogan was from his stand-up, not even from his podcast, because I listened to his stand-up before his podcast was even a thing. And then when he started his podcast, I was like, oh, I remember watching his stand-up comedy. So yeah, I think either stand-up comedy is something I could probably talk about for hours, movies or music for sure.
What are like, what would you say is the stand-up special you've seen the most?
Probably, that's hard to say because there's so many of them I've watched over and over again. Maybe No Refunds from Doug Stanhope. I've watched that one a lot. And then Dave Chappelle. Those never get old.
I will find myself every now and then I go back to Eddie Murphy's Delirious. That
Yeah, Eddie
one.
Murphy's great.
Yeah.
I haven't watched him in a while.
There you go. Do you know this evening? Down the rabbit hole. I probably missed it. What is your Spotify Wrapped look like as a big music
Oh,
lover?
yes. Let's get into that real quick.
Okay, I'll be honest. I am. It's a weird thing. It's kind of like when people say I don't like food. It's like you eat every day. What you mean? It's like everyone likes
I
food.
know.
It's like saying I don't like
So
air.
funny.
What's funny, I will say it's a weird thing. I'm probably one of those few people I don't like music. And it's like it's not that like I don't listen, but it's just like if I have a long trip or something, my first instinct is not let me put on like this really long like Spotify playlist. Like I'll listen to TV or show or like a podcast before I think about, oh, let me put on like this whole album. You know what I mean? So I'm probably the wrong person to talk to about music, which is funny because my mom used to own a music store and it's a big part of her life. So it's like the whole thing just skipped a generation.
So my top artists, my
There we go.
number one was Tyler Childers, who's a country artist, but it's
Okay.
a little bit different. Like his last album was a gospel album. So like he's very well rounded, I guess you could say, in music. And then NF was number two, who's a rapper. And then Mount Joy was number three, which is kind of like an indie rock band. And then Creedence Clearwater Revival was number four, which
Okay.
is classic. And then number five was People Under the Stairs, which is a hip hop group. So a lot of different
I was gonna say that
genres.
is a very eclectic list. Okay.
Yep, that's my list. So pretty funny. That's why I always tell people, and of course, my number one podcast was Joe Rogan. But I always tell people that like my music taste is all over the place. Like if you listen to one of my playlists, it'll just go from like 70s rock to 90s hip hop to pop to everything.
You know what? When it comes to movies, I feel like individual snippet stuff I could probably debate with people, but probably the only thing I will say this, if people ask me, it's like, like a bunch of the sports guys, especially like the media room, a lot of them love football and they're like, people will get into their whole bets and parlays and it's like, did you see the Bills versus Lions? And I'm like,
Oh yeah, I only
bro.
follow MMA and combat sports.
Like I watch basketball, but it's like when people want to tell me about fantasy football, it's like, bro, like talk to me about the MCU from Marvel. Like that's my second sport I follow. So I could maybe talk about that, what I like, what I want them to do, what I think they could do better in their next projects. I could maybe talk about that, but for movies, what it is, I guess, what would be your thing to talk about?
I don't know. I mean, I really watch all kinds of different movies. I'm a big comedy movie person, but I also really like to watch crime movies like Pulp Fiction, Goodfellas, Reservoir Dogs, so like a lot of Tarantino movies and stuff like that, suspense movies. So I feel like I could talk about that. But
Hey,
I would probably
very
be talking about older movies. I probably wouldn't be talking about anything new. So
okay. I
who
was
would
gonna
want to
say,
listen to
dude,
it?
are you no, go for it, right? You know, someone is like, oh my gosh, I'm a young person who loves the old stuff too.
Yep.
What about horror? Are you a big horror person? Like
I like the
slasher and all that?
classics.
Okay.
I never really got too much into horror movies though. Because I either like something that's gonna make me laugh, or I like something that has a really good storyline. So I feel like horror movies, sometimes it takes a while to like get to the good stuff. So I get like fall asleep if it doesn't like make me scared right away.
You're not right there. It's like, oh my God, she's gonna get killed by the guy in the dark again, you know.
Yeah.
I get you. I'm a big chicken, so I'm not the best with horror, but I do my best, I'll say that. No, but look, we've had a lot to talk about. Did I leave off anything? Did you want to ask me anything? Because I know it's like my semi-annual show with you, so.
No, I don't think so. I think we covered everything.
Well, there we go. Obviously, guys, can you believe it? Last UFC event, last major MMA event in the United States for 2023. I mean, it's always like, okay, like Monday morning, I'm like, all right, this is awesome. And like, that's it. And then it's like by Friday, I'm like, oh, like I got another 4 weeks of no MMA to talk about. Like, what do I do? You know, like I'm not good at going on vacation. You know, it's like, I
Yeah.
have to have something to do, otherwise it's like, oh well, let me just, sleep in and eat, I guess, again, So I'm not good with that. So I need MMA to come back sooner rather than later, but that's just me. Brianna, I appreciate you coming on my show. Always a great time. Always look forward to talking with you. What do you have coming up, or what would you like to shout out so fans can follow you?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram. Brie.Eckert is my handle or whatever you call it. And my podcast, I have two podcasts. I have the Brilliant Resilient Experience, which that's where I do interview style. Like I have conversations with people. I have guest episodes, mostly fighters, but I have all kinds of different people on there. And then Brie Talks MMA. That is my MMA show. It's my solo podcast. So it's just me, where I break down the fights and I cover not only UFC, but I cover local shows. I cover Bare Knuckle. I cover PFL. I cover a little bit of everything on there. So,
well, we definitely look forward to it. Thank you once again. You will definitely be on the show next year. I will hit you up. Once again, guys, thank you for listening. Remember, like, comment, subscribe, and we'll be back.